Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on a special episode of Friend of Maryland, I chat with Fergie Tovar about No Limbs. Today is Fergie Tovar, a San Francisco-based fat activist and editor of the upcoming anthology Hot and Heavy, Fierce Fat Girls on Life, Love, and Fashion. Fergie, thank you so much for coming back on Friend of Maryland.
Yes, of course. My pleasure.
So I'm excited to have you on today because I know that you recently attended No Lose. And I didn't get to go, and one year I'll save the money and figure out how to make it across the South Pacific to see it and to attend. But for now, I'm just going to live vicariously through you. I hope that's okay.
Yes, I would love that.
So for my listeners who don't actually know what No Lose is, can we start just by, you know, tell us what it is, what it's for, tell us all about it.
Okay, well, No Lose itself is actually an organization. But when people go to the conference, they often refer to the conference as No Lose. But No Lose is an acronym for National Organization of Lesbians of Size. So originally started out as a fat lesbian kind of advocacy group, like organization, and it's kind of grown into a lot of different things. But right now it's kind of known as a conference for fat queer people and allies. It's a 3-day conference. It was happening, I think it was happening biannually for a while, and now it seems to be happening every year.
Oh, so that's awesome. Exciting.
And for the past 3 years, I've attended the past 3 years, and they've, every year it's been in Oakland, California, so like in the East Bay area.
Nice.
And it's just 3 days of talking about all kinds of issues related to fatness, related to fat activism, and it's a really amazing sort of gathering ground and opportunity for people who don't normally see each other, maybe even throughout the year, to see each other this one time. And there are people who have friendships that really kind of they really only get to see each other this one time a year at No Lose. So it's kind of this really special, interesting, fascinating, magical place. And interestingly enough, it's kind of started to be referred to, the conference has started to be referred to as Fatlandia. So it's very much about creating fat space, like this kind of like other land. And it's funny because I literally just got back into San Francisco from Fatlandia, and it was with my friend, and we were sort of saying, oh my God, I feel like I have to acclimate to being in the United States / California again. So it very much has this feel of kind of like an oasis, if that makes any sense.
No, you know what? It actually makes total sense. I know that when I was still in the States, I used to attend the Association of Women in Psychology conference every year. And it was a gathering of feminists, academics and clinicians and practitioners and from actually all different kinds of disciplines, not just psychology, but it was kind of like a rebirth every year in the sense of where I was living in the States was an openly hostile environment for, you know, people who identified as feminists or really different of any kind. Yeah, I totally understand that oasis idea.
Yes.
So just from my own ignorance, the only conferences I've ever attended are, you know, very kind of traditional academic conferences where they have like a call for papers and people then submit their stuff and it's reviewed and certain people are asked to then present at the conference. What is No Lose like? Like, how does it get organized in that sense?
Yes, it's very similar to the preparation around an academic conference. So there's definitely a call for submissions. Typically, they, you know, much like a call for papers, they have sort of areas that they feel are relevant. Every year there's a new theme. So this year, for example, was Fat Strikes Back. It was kind of this like vaguely Star Wars themed kind of imagery. And so they sort of open up the submissions to kind of, you know, how does your topic, your potential submission or your potential workshop fit into this theme? And then they make a selection process. People are informed. It follows very much, like, it follows a very similar trajectory. Mm. So, yeah, that's the people who run No Lose are volunteer-based. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a 100% transparency around the finances. So, for example, the final day, there's a meeting in which all of the finances are discussed for the year. So they're a little bit unusual in sort of conference organizing in that sense, but very similar in most other senses.
So what was your favorite thing about it this year?
Oh, there were so many things. I mean, there were lots and lots of workshops. I actually have the program right in front of me. Do you want me to read you some of the titles?
I was going to say, yeah, share with us some highlights. Absolutely.
Yes. So the workshops I went to were Reframing and Reclaiming Fat Bodies. Mm. Is Health a Moral Imperative? I want to talk about that in a minute.
Nice.
There was one about, you know, inclusivity, rather sort of getting rid of the idea that people of color should be included and
right.
sort of seeking power. So it was like, We Want Power Part 1, POC only, or People of Color only. It was sort of a gathering around discussions related to people of color in fat space and fat activism and how it's kind of perceived by society at large and the community within the community. There was a fashion show the first evening. And then this is not a work. Well, it was sort of a workshop, but there was this thing called Fat Scouting badge making.
So
it was sort of like,
awesome.
It was like a Girl Scouting or Girl Guides or something like that. And we made all these little badges that we felt were relevant to our identities. It was really fun.
I'm so jealous.
Ridiculous thing. And so that was fun. And then, there were other workshops I attended, Finding Your Voice, How to Make Your Argument Advocating for Fat Acceptance, and that was led by Deb Burgard and Linda Bacon.
Oh, wow.
There was another workshop, Interrogating Cool Culture and Fat Community, so talking about social hierarchies within fat community, which was really interesting. I attended the tail end of a working class caucus. The workshop I taught was called Fat Sluts, Hungry Virgins. Today, the final day, so Sunday, we did a special brunch salon. I hosted it with a friend who's a contributor in Hot and Heavy, and it was a 2-hour lineup of excerpts from the book. So there were 10 different essays that were read they were sort of excerpts from the essays.
Mm.
And that was really amazing and very, very intense. But to go back to the workshops that I felt were really thought-provoking for me, one was sort of, is health a moral imperative?
Mm.
And I think this is really interesting because I think there's a lot of discussions in fat community right now around health. At least that's what I'm noticing. There's a lot more of a discussion. I feel like there's an emerging discussion that's really focused on health at every size, and sort of very much like, I call it keyword health. really interested in this idea of, can you be fat and healthy? Yes, absolutely. You know, these kinds of conversations. And I felt like this workshop kind of reframed the debate around, or reframed the discussion and asked, why are we interested in, you know, health? What is it about health that's so important to our community? What is it about this identity of healthy that matters so much? And should that be sort of where our resources are going emotionally and maybe even financially and politically? And I thought that was a really super interesting and super rich topic. And I think it goes back to, you know, who has access to health?
Mm.
Like in the United States, where you know, there is not universal health care, and you're talking about health in a for-profit model, it makes things very, very complicated in terms of, you know, like. I think there's things to be said about looking at it from a race perspective, like a critical race perspective, looking at it from a class perspective, looking at it from a size perspective, obviously, looking at it from an ability perspective. And so I had a lot of thoughts around that, that idea, because I personally do not identify as healthy, if you can believe it. It's funny because I don't know. I think I'm curious how you are going to experience this statement and how others would experience it. But I mean, it's not that I don't necessarily identify. I do not identify as unhealthy. I just don't have an identity around my health at this point. And some of it has to do with the fact that I have not been. I don't have chronic illnesses. I do not have a lot of exposure or interface with hospitals and the medical system. So there's definitely an element of I'm not super involved in the system, the medical system. So there's that, and I want to own that. But for me, also as sort of a fatty, I sort of think like that's not where. I don't frame my identity as a fatty in terms of health.
Right.
So, and in fact, I kind of see myself as, I mean, I sort of think of myself around the identity of health as, you know, I don't know. Like, to be honest, it got me thinking a lot about this issue. But for me, my reflexive reaction was, oh, you know, why is this even an issue? Like, why are we talking about fatness as a health issue? So it's really complicated, and I don't know how much time you have to talk.
No, we've got all the time in the world. We will make the time. You know, I think it's, I think you're right in the sense that absolutely it's a really complicated thing, and it's obviously very intersectional in terms of who has access to health, who gets to define health, who automatically doesn't get to have health based on the way that we define it. And I think that I know at least for me, in my work, especially my work as a fat activist, it's difficult often to try to find a good balance between wanting or feeling like I need in a way to address the question that I always get from the media and from people at my presentations, which is, well, are you healthy? You know, they always want to know that because I'm standing up here presenting them with science that fat people absolutely can be healthy, just like non-fat people can be healthy. And of course, they want to. And I know that in my experience, I've struggled with how to deal with that. And what I tend to do now, and what I've been doing for most of this year, as I've had a bit more media attention on me, is I always start by trying to explain to them. Well, it depends on how you define health, right? So if we're talking about metabolic health in terms of like blood pressure and cholesterol and if we're talking about healthy behaviors like wearing a seatbelt when you're riding a car and, you know, getting fiber in your diet, you know, or are we talking about health the way that most governments define it, which is strictly by BMI? So then I go on and then I go on and kind of clarify, you know, where I kind of fit in terms of those. And then I always follow it up with, but none of that matters. Like, you know, and try to get them to appreciate that, if I am healthy or if I'm not healthy, that doesn't dictate to me whether or not I should have like dignity, like basic human rights kind of thing. And my experience with that is that when I'm dealing with small crowds or individual people, they're really receptive to that and they can appreciate that. When I do that with the media, they always cut out everything except me saying yes, kind of thing. Like, you know, I give them and in fact, the 2020 episode that I did earlier this year, they actually didn't cut most of it out, but they did cut off the first part about, you know, talking about the defining of health. And they cut it directly to me saying, you know, I eat well, I exercise regularly. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know. Oh, just kill me now.
right. Well, I think that's the thing, right? And I think in the U.S. context, basically there's this, we're in a culture, an incredibly hostile culture of the war on obesity. So I feel like what's happening is that for some people, I mean, some people have been doing health at every size work for a very long time. And, you know, before the war on obesity kind of has started to peak, and now we're at a point where I feel like we're getting trapped and kind of mired in this conversation because of the quote-unquote, the alleged health concern, right?
Mm.
And I say alleged because, again, in the United States, when you're talking about a for-profit medical model, you are not talking about health in any kind of recognizable form. You're talking about health vis-a-vis profits, vis-a-vis lots of other things that have to do with money.
Yes.
And I think Deb Burgard gave me some really fantastic language. She said, whenever issues of health come up, you say, treat the disease. You know, we're not talking...
Not diversity.
When we start
talking, she's got that great
healthy,
quote.
Who's not healthy.
Yeah.
We're talking about, in actuality, we're talking about assigning a morality to it. We're talking about assigning who deserves to be treated and who deserves not to. And that's really the crux of the question. And I think if we really get down to it, I think that that would sound absolutely barbaric, and it does, which is why it gets rephrased in sort of this health perspective and sort of this, like, savior perspective. Like, you know, we're so concerned about you, it's your health that's really our concern, which I don't see as actual. I don't see that as true. I don't see that as authentic. And I sort of think, you know, but at the end of the day, are we really debating about who deserves treatment? Is that what we're really debating? Like, you know, have we decided that we have a hierarchy and certain people deserve medical care and certain people do not? Because, I mean, I think that would be really, really horrendous. But
agreed.
I feel like that's very much where we are, you know? It's basically been put out to kind of the public courtroom or whatever you want to call it, like the sort of courtroom of public opinion. And all of this is subject to rhetoric. All of it is subject to fat phobia. And again, in a for-profit model, a medical model, we're talking about tons and tons and tons of resources and money. And I sort of think about, like, for instance, the fact that the American Sociological Association, or rather the American Psychological Association, is right now trying to position itself as, or trying to position psychiatrists and psychologists as the experts on the issue of obesity.
Right.
They're trying to wrench the expert status or title from the medical community and make it sort of this neurological issue. And it's really interesting seeing the politics of it. When you start to see the political machinations of it, you start to see how kind of this really isn't about health and how it's kind of, you know, it's quite, I mean, I don't mean to be over the top, but it's kind of sinister. And, you know, and then when you bring in the lens of race and class and ability, we're talking about entire groups of people. And I think, again, to sort of quote Deb Burgard and Linda Bacon in their workshop, they talked about the fact that these, you know, people are being scripted, fat people are being scripted, and sort of there's a lot of intersections with fatness and things like race and things like class.
Absolutely.
And there's this kind of sort of argument around fatness, like we shouldn't, but these are the same communities that are already not receiving treatment, and how fatness and health and those kinds of things can actually be code, like coded racism, coded classism.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about actually denying people of color who are fat health care. We're not saying that, but who is actually being impacted by this? And we see who it is. It's the same people who are constantly marginalized in the United States.
No, absolutely. Well, and Paul Campos talks a lot about that in his work as well.
Yes,
you know, this idea of, the intersectionality, especially with class and with race. Well, I mean,
yes,
it sounds like you had an amazing time at No Lose, and I'm jealous, like I said, because I would love to attend. It sounds amazing. I know that when I did the Fat Studies conference here a few months ago, it occurred to me at some point during the first day that it felt just really great to be around other people who kind of spoke the same language, who were familiar with the same kind of literature that I knew. And then, of course, at the same time, it was great to also just be around other fat people. I don't have a lot of
definitely.
I don't have a lot of rad fatty friends. In fact, I don't really have any. And so it was just kind of nice. It was like, this is awesome.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what I find really, really fascinating from sort of a social science perspective is that when I am in fat community, the way that I am experiencing fat people's bodies is completely different from when I'm out in sort of San Francisco experiencing people's bodies.
Yes.
And it's amazing how When I'm in Fatlandia, when I'm at No Lose, everybody's body is, you know, larger than the average person's body. I mean, there's a few thin allies there, but for the most part, it's fat people. And I experience their bodies, and it quickly becomes, I don't want to say normalized, because I see it as very radical, but like it's my brain and my ability to see and the way that I'm seeing changes. And their bodies become completely normal. I don't read them as fat, if that makes any sense.
Yes. No, it totally does.
And it's kind of incredible as a social experiment to kind of realize that when you're immersed in sort of like a culture where people have similarly sized bodies or similar kinds of looks or whatever, that your brain kind of metabolizes them as, okay, now we're in a new environment and we're adapting the way that we see things and this is our new normal. And so especially the first 2 years, I actually have this interesting experience where I would meet people at No Lose at the conference and we would become friends and then we would make plans to see each other after the conference. And you know, a couple weeks would pass after the conference, and I would just be, there were even moments where I met people at the conference, and I thought, you know, that person isn't fat. Why are they here? and then a couple weeks later, seeing them again after having been in my sort of normal everyday San Francisco life where most people are incredible. There's a high priority on fitness in San Francisco, so there's a lot of very quote unquote fit thin people. And when I say fitness, I mean thinness.
Right.
That, you know, I feel like they're conflated here. And then I'll see them and it's like, oh my God. And it's just like there's this instant recognition of them as a fat person outside of the environment we had met. I don't know if this is making any sense.
Oh, it makes total sense to me.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense to me. And I think that that's, you know, probably really true for all of us and for a lot of us. One of the women who was at the Fat Studies conference who was very, very thin actually came up to me like at the end of the first day and said and shared that she was kind of experiencing her body in a very new way, being surrounded by by such fat bodies, which was not an environment that she often found herself in, the only thin person in the room. So I definitely think that there's a lot to be said for how we, you know, experience our own bodies and other people's bodies and quote unquote what's like normal to us. And absolutely that can shift and that can be changed. And, you know, that's part of the reason why a lot of us work to get, you know, more visual representation, you know, of fat bodies kind of out there as normal, not the headless fatty, you know, kind of phenomenon in the media. Because it does. It shifts how we perceive things. Absolutely.
Yes, and one of the things, in terms of perception, one of the things I love about the conference is that one of the most beloved elements of No Lose is pool time. There's a pool at the hotel.
Awesome.
And it's just, there's, for some people, I mean, I can't really speak for other people, but I am pretty sure that there's many people who do not feel safe or good wearing a bathing suit out in maybe regular, like at a beach or at a public pool or something like that. And I know that even though I feel like I've grappled with a lot of my internalized body stuff, I still feel reluctant to sometimes go into like a public pool environment with like a bikini or something like that on. But normally among my friends, or, you know, if I go to a pool party with friends or we're at No Lose or something like that, I feel much safer. But what I'm saying is that there's this culture of kind of like limited amount of clothing, that is happening at No Lose around the pool party. So a lot of people have, or around the pool, I should say, a lot of people bring bathing suits, like one pieces, or a lot of people this year, and in the past few years I've gone, what is now being called a fatkini.
Right.
but wearing kind of these like two pieces, and I actually brought a one piece and a two piece, and I really loved both of them. But just kind of that freedom of like having your belly exposed and having your thighs, whether they jiggle or are big or whatever, are exposed, and you know, and big arms, and you know, double chins, and this kind of and like seeing the way, and when people are wearing less clothes, you see how their fat moves and sits, and it affirms the way that your body is moving and sitting and doing. And I feel like a lot of times there's not a lot of, like you were saying, visual representation. And that's so important in our feeling of home in our own body. You know, I love it when I see women who have a body, their body fat is shaped similarly to mine. You know, like ever, I feel like there's many different ways that fat bodies come. But I love it when, you know, I see like a belly that looks like mine, or I see arms that look like mine. And it just, it affirms the kind of like feeling like this body is good, this body is okay. And there's somebody who's amazing and beautiful and hot who has that body. And I'm admiring them right now. And I'm in this experience. And I just love that. I feel like there's kind of, I think the phrase I'm searching for is like this like project in visual re-education or something like
right.
that. that happens over 3 days, and it's just so magical and so incredible. Yes.
Well, we're pretty much out of time now. But thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about No Lose and kind of sharing the highlights and your insights and stuff, because I definitely kind of, I'm all warm and fuzzy feeling right now, feeling almost like I was there, which is great.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming back on the show and talking to us about No Lose, and hopefully there's people out there listening who will mark it on their calendars for next year and make their way out to Oakland.
Yes, absolutely. If you go to No Lose, NOLOSE.org, you can learn all about the organization and the conference itself. So thank you so much for having me.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Closing the show is Big Mama Thornton with They Call Me Big Mama.